Accession number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Gagan?
I was born in 13 Suffolk Road, Plaistow, London, E13, on the 6th of August, 1929.
And could you tell us something about your family background? What sort of a family came, what your parents did?
I had the best parents you could have, but my father was an ex-1914 war veteran. He had been wounded, and where we lived, when I was born, there was a big depression on. And I was brought up in poverty, and also we had to line up 7 o'clock in the morning.
Hang on, we're running ahead a bit. Tell us a bit more about your father's war service, what you know of it and how it affected him.
Well, my father, he joined the army when he was 17, and he joined the army and he was in the Border Regiment, and then in 1914 he transferred to the Royal Field Artillery, and he was in the Somme, and from the Somme, where he was wounded, he went to the Dardanelles, where he was wounded again.
So the Dardanelles is before the Somme, so it might be the other way around.
Yeah, it would be. And when he came out of the army, they couldn't get employment or anything like that, because it was a very depressed area. And he also joined the Salonika reunion, which he used to go to. And he may not have any soles on his shoes, but his shoes were so highly polished, no one noticed it, you know.
Now, what effect did his war service and the wounds have on him, do you think, but physically and mentally, as far as you were concerned?
They didn't have no effect on him physically. He'd still go to try and, whenever he got work, he'd go to work. And mentally, he was very, very bright. He was bright.
So he didn't have nightmares or any trauma about it?
No. He didn't drink or anything like that. Just a heavy smoker.
Now tell me, what did him and your mum do for a living?
Well, my mother, she'd get any job of cleaning or anything like that. And my father, he'd go anywhere to get jobs. I've known him to cycle down to Southend 3 days at a time, just to earn a few bob and to come home, to keep us a little bit of food, things like that.
And what kind of work would he take? Labouring work or what kind?
Labouring work, everything, you know, any kind of work what he could get.
Now, what was your house and living conditions like? So it's obviously quite hard up.
In Plaistow was a small, very small house, 2 rooms up, 2 rooms down. Outside toilet, no hot water, nothing. It was just a basic house, and everyone down there kept chickens or anything so they could get eggs or anything like that. And food was very scarce, but they were great parents.
How many in the family, brothers and sisters?
There was 2 sisters and myself.
And what was life like growing up in the streets of Plaistow? What do you remember of your childhood?
It was very, although you had nothing, it was very happy. You didn't have no traffic, nothing like that. You could go out, you could be out late at night, no fear of muggings, anything. It was just everything there which you could wish for, you know.
Was there a sense of community in your local street?
It was, the community in the local street was marvellous. Any parties going on, if the schools had a function or something, everyone would be there, everyone would be doing their bit, the complete lot. So it was terrific.
Now tell me about your education then.
My education, I started school in Grange Road School, Plaistow, and then the war came. The war was declared on the 3rd of September.
Now, how were you doing before that? Because you'd go at about 5, so you'd be at school about 5 years before the war started.
Yeah, and the education was basic. You learnt to read and write, and you learnt arithmetic. It was arithmetic those days. And you progress through there, and everyone was joined in at sports. You know, I've got many certificates for sports, things like that. But there was a big community spirit.
Did you do well at school, you think, before the war broke out?
As far as I could say, I did do well, considering what the circumstances were, you know, and no one had nothing, and you went to school, some kids didn't even have shoes to go to school in, you know, and but the education, they were strict. They were nice teachers, but you couldn't answer back. There was discipline, and all the teachers wore suits and ties, and you know, and you really respected the teachers in those days.
What was the discipline like?
If you played up something like that, many times I've been out and got two-handers.
What's a two-hander? Just explain.
Two-handers, one on each hand with a cane, and also a couple across the behind. I've had that, and once I got four-handers for something which I didn't do. Someone had tipped a lot of potato from, we all used to go to three dinners, and someone tipped a load of potato peels down the toilet, and I'd been in the toilet, and someone said it was me, and for that I got four-handers. But the following day they found out who it was who did it, so I got two sweets off the teacher. He gave me two sweets compensation, but it was part of life. You accepted it and things like that. And
what about that? Were there any signs of war? I mean, you were, what, 10, 11 when the war was coming? Were there any signs of war? I mean, did you get your gas mask or anything before the war broke out?
Well, everyone was talking, but the day, I can always remember, we were sitting indoors, and my father managed to get an old wireless, and then it came over that we are at war. And just as they said we're at war, the siren went, and we'd been getting air raid shelters and things like this just after, but when it was declared, you know, everyone come out in the street, and then when the air raid warning went, everyone rushed inside, because it went just about the same time as they give out that war was declared.
Now, how did you react to the, you know, I mean, you're just a kid, you're what, 11?
Well, we got used to the air raids.
To war breaking out. Did you understand?
I understood a good bit of it, yes. And also my father, he told us and everything, like, you know.
And what did he think of it? I mean, he'd done his bit, in the previous one. What did he think of the outbreak of war?
He was devastated that, you know, that the war had broken out. But he didn't worry too much, you know what I mean? All he worried about then was the family. He wasn't worried about the war, because he had been through so much and he understood it.
Now, what happened straight away? I mean, was there a question of being evacuated in September?
A lot of people, they started evacuating all the children and everything, the school. They all had to put down if they'd want to be evacuated, which 9 out of 10, the parents said yes, they can, you know, to get them evacuated. And mostly from where I was in Plaistow and West Ham, they went out to Somerset way. Most of them went Somerset, down that way.
And what about you and your sisters?
No, we didn't.
Now, why not? Who decided?
Well, my sisters were older than me, and they were working. And I decided that I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave home. So I stayed in London all during the war. You know, and we used to go into the air raid shelters.
Hang on. Just going back though, I mean, tell me about what sort of air raid precaution, because there's the phony war. So how did life change in the phony war? What about air raid precaution? Did you get your gas masks?
Yes, we got gas masks.
Now, what do you remember of them and being issued with them?
Well, I always remember we had to be issued with them, and they were the face ones. And even at school, we used to have gas mask training.
So that's before the evacuation, that's before the war started?
Yeah, yeah. We had to have everything like this.
Now tell me about the training and what it felt like wearing one.
Well, it was more, to the children, it was more of a game. They was all putting it on them, and you could blow like a raspberry on some of them, and they used to hold that and blow a raspberry. And also, we had the big ones for putting children in, and they used to put the children in, and we'd all, even in the school, people would bring their children, young children, because the school opened their school to give them instructions on things like this, and in the hall. So you'd find people coming from outside the school, bringing children in with youngsters, and then they'd get in, and then you've got to work the end to bring in, pump the air into it. But it's also got the gas mask on the corner, you know, and I can see it as plain can be now.
What was it like wearing one when you put one on?
It wasn't too bad, you know, it's all according where you were. You had to wipe the glass because otherwise it would be misting up all the time. And then they brought out some little tube or something which you could wipe over the glass and keep it clear while you was there, you know. And also a thing what they brought out, because there was no, everything was, it was blackout overnight. And they all also brought out fluorescent badges.
Now tell me about the blackout. How was your house blacked out then?
Well, our house was blacked out was big old curtains or a blanket all over the windows, because we'd only just changed from gas to electric when the war started, you know, and that was so you could switch it on where the other one, you know, it'd be going out and you didn't know what it was, but you'd switch that on and then you'd go out the door, turn the light off while you went out, my father used to, then go back in, switch on and see that there was no glint of it. No one was allowed to smoke in the street or light a fag up, go send them the aircraft to see it or anything like this, which people didn't realise then, you know, you couldn't see them. But that was, everyone was strict like, on the air raid precautions.
What were these badges you mentioned?
They were small badges, about 2 inches across, all done in fluorescent paint.
And what colour? Just white? Or?
White, but they glowed in the dark. And you might see people with 3 or 4 on, and that perhaps you'd be right near them. And if they did have a torch, it would be down. And also, if any vehicle, they always had a mask over the headlights with 3 slits so that nothing went up, but 3 slits has come down to show where they're going. And if there was an air raid, they'd switch it off. And things like that, you know, so it was...
What was it like on the streets in the dark then?
You'd only hear someone coming, but you'd hear someone coming and you'd just, like, you know, be careful and everything. In those days, you could speak to people and everything, you know, you say, oh, you're all right, you know, and lovely. No, everyone was friendly.
Now tell me about the air raid shelters. did you have your own air raid a Morrison, that's an indoors one, or an Anderson?
Anderson. Yeah.
You had an Anderson?
We had an Anderson.
Tell me about that. How was it fitted and what was it, you know?
Well, it was just dug into the back garden, and in that area was, you got a lot of water up. So they'd dig out for an air raid shelter, then you'd be a lot of times in water and everything like that. So a lot of people dug an air raid shelter for the what they reckoned you should be. I think it was 3 foot deep in the ground for the bottom part. And it was only about 6 foot high. So you go in and then all the earth you got out of there, you'd cover over the top and everything like that. And you'd have an escape door in the back. That was all fitted, bolted, but you could undo the bolts from inside and it would drop inside if you were trapped. And a lot of people, out of old boxes and that, put where the opening was, they put a little porch over it so no water would go in there, because if it was raining. And many times you go in a shelter, and you'd have to put any old board or anything down because you'd have water in the bottom.
How deep?
Sometimes 3 or 4 inches. And, you know, and my father, he managed to get some old board in and put made seats either side, and you'd just sit in there for the five of us, and we'd be sitting there.
So no bunks in there or anything like that?
Oh, no, you couldn't, wouldn't have room for nothing like that. You'd just sit there and sit next to one another to keep warm.
So that was the Anderson. Was there any other shelters, a communal shelter? Or
yes, there was in Grange Road Park. In Grange Road Park, there was the big community shelters, which we went to sometimes.
Now, can you describe them? Because there's one or two left, but they're not as well known. People don't recognise them as shelters now.
Well, you went down into the shelter. You'd have an entrance. It could go down to about 10 foot. And you went down, and the air raid shelters was mostly brick or concrete. And you'd go in them, and they was covered over with about 3 or 4 foot of earth. That is to stop any shrapnel or anything like this. And also, any bomb blasts, it would go through. But the entrances used to be up, mostly corrugated tin. And sometimes it might be a bomb drop and blow the entrance away. So they'd have to come and repair that. But all the people would be...
And what was on top? Was there concrete as well on top of the brick? Concrete slab or just...
Yes, there was. That was on top of the air raid shelter. And then the earth went on top of that.
And what was it like in the communal air raid shelters?
The spirit was very good. You got some people might have had a few beers and that, and come in, and then someone might even come in with a piano accordion or something. And everyone, those days, you know, you'd have a bit of a sing-song until, you know, especially if the old aircraft guns was really banging about, and that, you know, he had someone trying to sing louder than the guns and that, but it was a real good spirit amongst the people.
Now, I'll come to the race later, but we'll just sort of do the basics first. What about rationing, food and clothing?
Well, rationing was very hard. Food, you got, say, 2 ounces of cheese a week. And if you lived in London, you'd had vegetables come in and that, but sometimes it would be hard for you to get veg. And mostly, like, if you what they done as well, you couldn't get eggs, and they brought powdered eggs in. And there'd be a small packet, about 6 inches high, about 4 inches across, and say inch deep, and that'd have powdered egg in. And you put a couple of that and mix it up, and that'd be equivalent, you know, you could make equivalent to 1 or 2 eggs, whatever you wanted. But you'd be lucky to get that. And also, meat was rationed. And if anyone had been out in the country and had come back with a rabbit or something, that was a luxury. And also, where I used to live, people used to go down the docks. We wasn't far from the docks, going out catching pigeons, things like that. And this used to be, because we've had pigeons for Christmas dinner, so I know what they were, you know.
And what about sweets? You wouldn't have money for sweets.
No, you wouldn't have no sweets, and that is why I think that most of the people of my age, they've still got their teeth, because those days you didn't have sweets or nothing like that to rot your teeth, and you didn't miss them. You didn't miss the sweets in the end, and sometimes you know, those days you used to have farthing golly bars or something like that, and licorice sticks or anything like that, you know. And it used to be, you got so used to not having the sweets that you didn't worry about it, you know.
And what about clothing rationing? Did that affect you much, or was that more? Would be your mum's department, but I mean.
Yeah, clothing. I'd never had much clothes to begin with, so the rationing didn't come hard, you know what I mean, in that respect, because we'd go around a second-hand shop, see what we could get. I didn't have a new suit until I was nearly 12 year old. That was the only suit, and that come off a Provident check, you know, but that was the first suit I've read.
What about the the black market? I presume you weren't. I mean, no, you would never. Were you aware of it much?
Yeah. There was a lot going on, especially some people had shops and that, you know, and they could buy a little bit of stuff on the black market, which was normal those days because that was the only way you got past. You know, you get by anything like that, and you know, didn't bother too much. And what was tea rationing, that hit a lot of people because you couldn't buy tea much, and they started making tea out of different things and acorns and stuff like that. So it was all tea. I mean, most people like tea, so that really hit them. And coffee, well, you couldn't hardly get much coffee during the war at all.
Now, what about your education? Because most of your schools disappeared, I presume. Well, yeah. What about your education? The last, because you were 11, what about the last 3 years?
Well, the school, my school shut down, and I had to go to another school, good way away, Hilda Road School. And we went to Hilda Road, we used to go to Hilda Road School, but then we had to leave Plaistow.
Right, is that because of the bombing? Right, so I'll just, now tell me about.
That's why I've stopped there for.
Yeah, that's. Now tell me about the bombing. It starts well. I mean, you get things like the end of the phony war. Did that affect you much? I mean, that's when Dunkirk and the rest of it. Would you be aware of that kind of thing as a kid?
Oh yes, yes, because a lot of the people there came home from Dunkirk. We used to go and meet them. Everyone.
Tell us about that.
Well, I can even. I've even got a book here, of a one man. His name was Joyce, and he came home. He'd been come all through Dunkirk, and we all went to meet him, and there was a hell of a lot of people coming home from, and they put bunting outside the house, welcome home from Dunkirk. There was a few people in my road what was captured and was prisoners of war through Dunkirk, and one man, he went, he was only young, and we didn't see him until after the war.
Now, did you make a fuss of the veterans then that came back?
Yeah, everyone, you know, really give them the greatest welcome they could give them. They'd be bunting all in the streets, not just their own house, you know, and everyone, and when they did come back, someone would be there to meet them, carrying their kit and their rifles down the road, all the kids, like, you know, carrying, and patting them on the back, and everyone appreciated those boys then.
Now, what's the next? The next thing would be the Battle of Britain. You'd see before the bombing starts. There's a Battle of Britain going on. Could you see that going on in these guys?
Yes, we used to stand outside and watch them.
And what could you see?
We could see all the planes, all the, especially the exhaust, like on a bright day, you know, with the exhaust, and we'd stand outside the air raid shelters watching them, and we see them shot down, and the. Also, we had the barrage balloons. We've even seen one plane hit a barrage balloon and come down. And my sister, who is still alive, lives in Chingford. We come out on the road and we're watching during the Battle of Britain there. And we were standing there watching it. And all of a sudden, from about 6 foot to our right, a big stream of bullets went right across the road, right across us. And my sister, she can confirm this. She lives in Chingford. She's 82 now. And so we went back into the air raid shelter.
So that was a burst of
machine gun.
Machine from a German?
Well, could have been from a German, our own plane, anything, you know, because there were so many up there fighting and that, you know. And also, we was getting bombs as well, not just the fighters were there. And also the unexploded bombs, we've had many come down.
Now that sounds like more like the actual Blitz when it started. Now tell me about the start of the Blitz.
Well, the Blitz, we were sitting, it was an evening, nice evening, there was no air raid warning given, and the next minute a whole sky lit up, and my father was working in Woolwich Arsenal at the time, and my old mum, she said, oh, the Woolwich Arsenal has gone up, you know, because some days you didn't have phones or nothing. But what had happened, the Germans had followed the Thames right along on the moonlight sky, and they dropped a bomb right on the gasometers in Beckton. And that lit the whole area up, and then the air raid warning went, and everyone's all in the air raid shelters and everything, you know. And we got it pretty bad.
Now, what was it like during the raids for you?
Well, you couldn't go out, like, you know, as a young kid and that, and the schools were shut mostly, you know, and half the time I wasn't in school. And everyone was there, like, you'd spend most of the time in the air raid shelters, even during the day, because down there, the Germans used to come over daytime, follow the Thames right down, bombing the docks, because they thought that if they knocked London out, that would be the heart of Britain. But I think they, you know, the people there, they had the spirit and the guts, and they said, no way.
So what was it like during a typical raid? What for you? I mean, what do you remember?
Well, you just sit there, and you'd more or less be holding each other, because there's not much you can do if bombs are coming down. You'd all be sitting there, like, comforting one another, you know, especially my old daddy, if it all right, you know, and everything like that, because he'd been through it all. And that'd be that, you know.
And so what was it like? I mean, could you hear things?
Give
us a picture of inside the shelter.
Oh, yes, you heard all the bombs coming down. There was the ACAT guns, and especially if you got the screaming bombs. And also, what the Germans had done, they were dropping bottles with the necks cut out so that it whistled. And you'd think they were bombs coming down. And, of course, you'd think they're unexploded bombs. So this was also affecting people. And also, they were dropping tape, like a very thin black tape, looked like an adhesive tape. And this was affecting radio signals and everything like that, because we used to go around looking for next morning for tape and aircraft shells, shrapnel, anything, you know. And perhaps, you know, you wouldn't go to school the next day and things like that. The windows
are... Any bombs land near your house?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think you're going to get
blown
out, but I mean, what sort of damage was done in your local area in Plaistow?
Well, mostly a lot of damage was done by incendiary bombs. This was one of the main bombs what the Germans had. They'd come over, they could drop them 1,000 at a time, just undo the aircraft, and they'd spread everywhere. And of course, all the local people and the air raid shelter, you know, like most of the men and all that, what was older men and that, they'd formed the fire watch and everything like this to keep any fires go. They'd be the first ones there, because firemen, they had more to do than anybody in an air raid, and the rescue people. So they couldn't be everywhere. So fire watching parties were formed up. They'd get all the sand everywhere. Nearly every house you had outside, a bucket of water, bucket of sand, stirrup pumps, you name it. Even ladders, people would leave ladders outside the house for going any rescue. And everyone had a community spirit.
But you didn't do fire watching, but other people, you know,
my father and everything like that, you know. Oh, we'd be there. We used to go around looking for incendiary bombs and things like this. Many times I took incendiary bombs to the air raid warden's place in Grange Road School, and used to take them there, and they used to put them in a bucket of water.
And what did they look like?
They looked something like a flask. You know, you'd buy a silver flask. It'd be something about 15 inches long and about that round, you know, maybe...
About three and four inches.
Across, you know, what I can remember, of about four or five inches across. And they were solid, like, it looked like aluminium, but they were a kind of a metal. And when they hit, there was a detonator in there, and there was... everything for causing fires, you know.
And you'd collect unexploded ones?
Oh, yeah, we used to go around collecting the unexploded and take them to the air raid wardens. And they'd have them in the playground. They have a big, I can remember one, they had an old water tank out of a loft somewhere, about 4 foot across, full of water, and they used to drop the incendiary bombs in them.